Welcome to Discern This. I'm your host, Lonzo Cook. Our guest today is Rich Truex, an information architect. Rich Truex, welcome to Discern This.
Thank you, Lonzo, and thank you for having me here. Happy Independence Day. It's July 2nd. I want to remind everybody that the Declaration of Independence was actually signed on July 2nd, although we celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day.
And happy Independence Day to you, Rich. I'd like to start off by asking, what exactly is an information architect?
Well, in my case, it's someone that worries about data and information, how it impacts society, tries to build things that help individuals manage information, looks for root causes to problems, and tries to find regenerative solutions to information management problems.
What is wrong with how the internet is currently structured?
In my view, the internet is treated as a utility, and it's been open to the commercial markets. But the internet really has become a fabric of society. It's not unlike air, water, energy. It's something that everybody really needs and should not be considered an optional service. It's really a fundamental requirement for functioning in a digital society that we're building as we move forward. Use of computer technology has become pervasive, and it's becoming inseparable between the person and the data. And so it's really important that we have appropriate ways to use technology to function in society, to perform our daily transactions and exchanges with other people. So it initially was a technology used by computer people to share information and develop any number of commercial products, but it's ultimately become the way we live every day. We carry computers on us, we're mobile, we're online 24/7, I think the lack of really a well thought out internet that is a foundation of our society, something that is mandated and clearly provided to every individual, is an important aspect of what we do every day in our lives.
But what is specifically wrong about how it is currently structured?
Well, I think one thing is we treat everything on the internet with a pretty common level of importance. And I think personal data has a higher priority, a more should provide a more secure environment, should guarantee some things that are not guaranteed by the internet, acknowledgement, deliverable confirmations, assurance that nobody else than the intended recipient was provided that information. But the fact that we really don't have a place for our own personal data to exist is probably the biggest problem of all.
Our own personal data doesn't exist. Could you explain that a bit further?
Well, our personal data is scattered in thousands of places. it's not consolidated or consistently managed by us in a single location. So my vision has been really to develop a hardware and software capability for data to exist in your own home, be backed up in a enterprise-like manner so that you know that you're not going to lose your data in the event that some catastrophic failure happens or a flood or fire takes out your computer equipment, that you have a way to restore data back to, you know, the current moment. And that is done by an agency that you trust, which rules out most corporate agencies that exist today. Who do you trust to hold and manage your data? And we've all been sort of spoon-fed the convenience over security question over the last any number of years with social media, with companies that co-opt our data or don't protect it or find ways to sell it. And we don't really have a say in how or when or how that's allowed. So there are a lot of issues with aggregating and building larger and larger storage databases of information that really is inseparable from a person and can be used without our consent, without our control.
In the public sphere, we talk a lot about, you know, the importance of our personal data, how it's being monetized, how bad actors, or at least corporate actors, monetize it, and not to the benefit of the owners, the people actually creating the data. So I wanted to take one step back and ask you, based on your experience as an information architect, what are some of the most consequential misperceptions that people have about how their personal data is handled?
I think that the lack of awareness about security in general. We tend to want to trust the person that we're dealing with, that computer system or corporation that we're exchanging information with. Credit bureaus aggregate data about individuals, and it's shared pretty much without our control in ways that I don't think we really anticipated when the laws were changed that created agencies that publish and divulge creditworthiness of individuals and corporations. And so we've evolved to a state where I think individuals don't have a choice. Since we don't have a place where we can store and manage and control our own personal information, the only option is, do you want to buy that? And if you want to buy that, then you need to tell us this, and we're going to take care of letting you buy that, but only till after you give us the information. And that transaction's probably not the overriding, but if you want to get medical care, you have to join. You want to get a car. You have to get a license. You know, there's a lot of places that we are giving our information to agencies, corporations. We just don't know what happens to it after we give it up. And there's no way to audit. There's no way to know what happened to it after it became part of somebody else's computer system or database. So, yeah, I think the fact that data breaches happen consistently just makes us numb to the fact that there are people working hard every day to capture our information and sell it, and we don't know what it's going to be used for down the road.
What should the foundational principles be, in your mind, of how our personal data should be handled?
Well, I think there are lots of them, and I don't think I know them all. I think this is a conversation I want to have, I want to continue to have with people and get more people involved in analyzing what do we do as a society moving forward. Artificial intelligence has accelerated the concerns of a lot of people. I would say that the inseparability between people and their data needs to be understood and upheld as a principle. That your data really is a complete part of you as a human being throughout your life. I think the principle of the rule of law is really important, that computer systems follow the same rules as paper-based systems followed years preceding us. We tend to think that a letter and an email aren't the same thing. But I think people view a letter and an email as exactly the same thing. They don't have the same weight. They don't carry the same rules. A first-class letter requires a search warrant in almost all cases to be opened, and that requires a judge to issue a bench warrant with very specific rules. So we don't have the same protection on our digital information as we do in other cases, and I think that principle needs to change. I think that, life isn't getting any slower, and the guys with the fastest computers are going to have a lot of control and say about the future, and keeping up is going to be a challenge. I think that personal sovereignty is probably needing to be looked at as a guiding principle, and how our personal sovereignty works within the constructs of a state or a national or continental or a global structure, and who's going to have jurisdiction in differences between a personal sovereign versus a state or a national sovereign environment. And I think life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, which I define as the ability to create, ability to perform work, ability to invent and share those inventions and with others, is really an important part of the structure of humanity, and our ideas, need to be protected in a digital world. That's a big challenge.
What are some of the key changes in terms of structural organization you would like to see happen so that we could refashion the internet to accomplish some of those goals you just alluded to?
I think people are becoming more aware of the problems of identity and trust, privacy, security, safety. There are standards organizations that are developing definitions of what goes into a standard for handling clinical information. And I think for me, I realized as a person working in healthcare that it's not just your healthcare information that's important. It's all of your personal data, whether it's your financial, banking, insurance, education. They're all meaningful and should have protection.
But how do we accomplish that? I mean, are there any, you've talked about, that our data we don't have control of our data, that it's spread in so many disparate areas. How do we regain control of that? What are some of the solutions you would suggest for that?
I think we have to really rethink the tools that we use. I think we need to rethink the laws and how we go about protecting the data. And I think we need to start focusing on alternative ways of supporting individuals as opposed to aggregating larger and larger databases of information. So I think that one of our biggest problems is that we tend to rely on a tool called the relational database, where we put data from thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the same place, making it a meaningful target for anybody trying to hack or steal information. So my thought is, if we change the core technology and store information about individuals in their own database and protect them with the same structure, technology, security, encryption principles, we can make things hundreds of thousands of times more difficult to hack and steal. Not an order of magnitude, but hundreds of thousands of orders of magnitude difficult, meaning that if you were able to steal data from a single person's database and it took you so much time, you're going to multiply that times the number of people you're trying to get data from. So I think that ownership of information and creating computing platforms that are easy for individuals to set up, use, that support the transactional environment needed to function in a digital world going forward is very important. So rather than using an application provided by a third party and sharing your data with that third-party application provider, your data would still reside in your own personal data storage unit. You would just purchase an application that allowed that functionality of sharing in a particular way with other people. So it's not limiting us by keeping our data in our own storage unit, in our own home. It's allowing us to have more control over how that is used and shared. And it becomes a platform and a, you know, standard way of developing applications, not unlike we've seen in the, you know, cell phone industry.
Could you develop that a little bit further? You mean in terms of you'd have, it'd be sort of an edge compute solution? Is that what you're saying?
It is definitely an edge computing type of solution where you have in your own home storage computing network technology that's packaged for an individual. So you don't need a massive mainframe to store and manage your data. You need a adequately powered computer that you come off the shelf every day with the appropriate software security structure and technology to store and manage your personal data and communicate with others on a network designed for personal data communications, meaning it's more secure. It doesn't broadcast or unencrypt data unknowingly.
But the centerpiece is that if you want to communicate with an application, a proxy of the application is brought into your personal compute, and the compute that's the, I guess, the edge scenario, and
you get to decide when you turn it on, when you turn it off, what it has access to, and who you want to interact with, as opposed to, well, I'll let people browse my data and just, you know, have no control over what they're doing when they're looking at it. So I think it's very possible with all the technology that we have today, without completely restructuring the world, to build personal databases that exist for each individual.
That sounds like a substantial undertaking. Is that a gigantic infrastructure cost? Is it more along the lines of the cable box that we used to have in days gone by in each household?
I think these kinds of goals have been described previously. Bill Gates wanted a computer in everybody's home. And I think my goal is to have a personal information appliance in everybody's home that functions to support your daily life and provide better protection over your information. If it's not in your home, you don't have much control or say about it. And if you have to manage all the applications that you would need, and you'd spend your entire day just managing remote applications. So I think it needs to be consolidated. I think it needs to be in one place. It protects you against a lot of, well, let me say it this way. Having all your information in one place, under your protection, with a secure environment, on a secure network, is a big step above where we are today in terms of safety and security. It makes the target for hackers a lot less appealing.
Would that secure data in your own home also be carried on your mobile device, since we do so much of our computing nowadays on mobile platforms?
It certainly could. There are database applications that provide that functionality, and it could be very granular. It could be well organized and situationally, I don't know the word for it, but if you're going to the, if you have an appointment with the doctor, you could take your relevant medical information with you on your phone. And so, you know, it's not unreasonable to know that your calendar has an appointment with your doctor. It says, hey, we should get this ready. We should put it on your phone. You show up at the doctor's office and your information is where you need it. You're going to go to the lawyer's office. It'll have, you know, the appropriate documents that are stored. Make a copy. You take them with you. I think it's not unreasonable to think that we could have devices that are smart, situationally aware, personally devoted to helping us function the way we need to in a digital world. Seems to me like that's kind of the goal with computing, is to make our lives easier and better. Rather than us worrying, where did I put that document? Do I have the right copy? You know, is it up to date? So I think there are plenty of applications for this in our daily lives.
Are you confident that a mobile device could be as secure as your personal data store at home?
Well, that's a good question. I think that they're very similar technologies, and so whether it's an encryption technology or a network technology that we need to improve, I think that's all very doable. The amount of processing power and storage capacity should not be a question. It's really about how well written are the applications, and I certainly think a mobile application, a mobile device, can be as secure as any device that's in the home. I just don't think you want all of your data stored on a mobile device.
I'd like to go back to what you were saying about relational databases. In your view, are relational databases the original sin of the internet that we have today?
Yeah. I don't think that, you know, in retrospect, I think they were a technology looking to help sell a product that had been invented that didn't really have a market. If you think back in the days when computers had large reels of tape, and that magnetic tape was used to store data, it wasn't until the invention of rotating disks with random access that caused really an interest in relational database technology. There was no use for a random access disk. And so I think it was more of a product architecture that created the relational database. I just don't think they knew where it was going to go. And I think that technology has certainly taken a number of awkward turns with hacking and data breaches and things that we've witnessed over the years. So, you know, I think we all believed early on that computers were secure. And it wasn't until we started to see how insecure they might be that we became more aware of the problem. But the larger and larger databases that exist become bigger and bigger targets for a wider audience of people. And know, when you think about all the bad things that might happen, you start to really get worried about it.
So in a way, should we think that relational databases are a legacy system or a vestige of a previous era of computing that have endured and made the overall internet and our personal data vulnerable as a result?
I think that's a better way to think of it. It's certainly a technology that was developed in the 60s. It thrived in the years to come. And the challenge to be the biggest and the fastest database was the race between software companies. And you know, the inventors of the relational database technology really never contemplated using it for individuals. It was a corporate strategy, a corporate product development. I think if you're an information architect thinking about how to help individuals and how to create a society that relies on digital technology, I think you would rethink how you built the technologies, how you put them together, and how they were intended to be used. So the fact that we don't have a really well-organized individual personal data device, it makes it very hard to imagine what that world would look like. If you had all of your information in one place and it was easy to find what you were looking for and it had the right version of what you were trying to use, and the automation of that device allowed it to truly manage and help you on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to what I feel like everybody deals with today, is where's my whatever, and how do I get it from here to there, and is it going to be safe while I'm sending it, and you know, where's it going to go after it gets where it's going? And you know, I think they're basic problems that we have today, and I think, you know, those of us that work in technology and, you know, spend our lives learning computers and know all about it, have to realize that most people don't care about most of what we do. They just want to be able to function in the world and transact business, live their life, you know, do the things that they want to do. They don't really want to become a computer expert.
Building on that, building on from your point, Rich, how do we get people to buy into the personal data store? Do we stress the security advantages or the ease of use? How do we get uptake? How do we build momentum for it to be implemented?
Well, there are certainly enough proven strategies of using fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, ease of use is a great attractor for people. Simplification, standards. You know, I think they'll all come into play. I think the discussion with artificial intelligence is going to make people more aware of the problem of not having control of their data. And we're just on the cusp of artificial intelligent application revolution. So stay tuned. Be aware.
I'd like to develop that theme, Rich. What are the particular challenges of the coming AI age that we need to be worried about, and how can we meet them?
Well, I think identity is an important aspect of communications, and knowing that you're speaking to an individual, a human being, as opposed to a machine, we need to develop a clear protocol and tools for identifying the person at the other end of a conversation. We need to know what we're dealing with when we're dealing in a digital environment. And I also believe that, you know, we have multiple personas. So, and I'm not discounting the fact that we'll all become meta individuals living in a digital world for some entertainment purpose. But for transactional activities that involve specific parties, I think you need to know who the other party is that you're working with. You need to be able to trust that architecture, that technology. I think that the ability of artificial intelligence to improve the lives of individuals should be an overriding concern for the development of artificial intelligence. It should not be used against individuals. It should only be used for individuals. And I think that is going to be a hard line to hold or define. There's always gray areas in the use of technology. And I'm sure that we're going to run into situations where we think we're helping others and unknowingly causing problems, whether it's related to how people treat each other, how people interact. So I think artificial intelligence has the other aspect of how do we deal with and control something that's smarter than we are. And we don't know the answer to that question. And so I think to a large degree, a group of people have said, hey, we should maybe slow down and pause until we have a better idea of the answer to that particular question. How do you control something that's smarter than you are? I certainly don't have an answer to that question. My belief is that we should, as quickly as possible, get all of our data, control it, protect it, and keep it away from others. And if there is a valuable use for sharing that data, that we get compensated, we know what we're doing with it, and we acknowledge that, you know, we've agreed to let that data go. But it should be our decision in our time frames with compensation to the individual and not to a third party that just happens to have a large quantity of information they can sell.
So the benefits of the data goes to the creators, the underlying individuals, us.
Absolutely. I think individuals have been the afterthought in all of this, although I will say there are applications and, you know, people teasing individuals with, you know, give us your data, we'll sell it for you. You know, we'll cut you in on a percentage, you know. I just find that data broker business model to be hard to control.
But do individuals have the sophistication to negotiate rates for their data?
I don't know that individuals will be able to determine that. The market will determine the value, and there will be application developers that are better at being transparent, are better at developing easy to use applications. There will be, I guess I see the basic infrastructure of capitalism taking, you know, advantage of individuals marketing and brokering their data. But they have to be given the opportunity first, and we may never see this, come about. So,
in describing the challenges coming AI age poses, when you stress the need for authentication, does that mean so that we know whether or not we are talking to a bot?
Right, and obviously, I don't want to propose that I'm an expert on artificial intelligence by any stretch of the imagination. But the examples that we see covered in the media of voice, people being, when you receive a phone call and somebody is impersonating a close member of your family or a relative, and you can't tell whether you're talking to a computer or that person, that's a challenge. And that should not happen in a situation where people are being preyed on and money is being interchanged. And so there are scary circumstances that we've seen with technology that just shouldn't have happened. They're scary. They're really a challenge to understand how people can think like that.
Richie, we talked about the importance of personal data stores. How would we go about managing such a system? How would we go about managing data under the rule of law?
The history of Big Brother, 1984, George Orwell, government control. When I was in high school, that was required reading. And I think it's a meme that exists in our culture, written by a tremendously powerful author, left us with an impression that is hard to get out of our heads. And so trust comes back to an overriding principle. Who do you trust? I look at the trust issue from the standpoint of a relationship between a sovereign individual and a sovereign entity. And what it comes down to is their ability to, I guess, support the rule of law. And that rule of law has to be amenable to both parties. So I believe that for this to be implemented properly, we have to establish a trusting relationship with some quasi-governmental agency that is given the authority to run a information management utility for the purposes of the citizens under that national infrastructure. So In my case, I've always looked at the Postal Service as a group of individuals who have laws on the books that function to protect the delivery of information, communications between multiple parties. Going back to Independence Day and founding fathers and Ben Franklin, one of the problems pre-Revolutionary War was the ability to communicate between two persons, between multiple states, in a confidential manner. And the Postal Service was created to assure that communications were private, that they were not openly read by other individuals or organizations. And so I think as you move forward into the reality of the digital world that we live in, we want that same kind of cultural idea to prevail in what we're doing with digital communications. And I think that the Postal Service historically has been relied on for a lot of things that have helped build this country. And I think they can be instrumental in helping to manage the infrastructure that we need to move forward in the digital world. It's not an immediate, like, oh, yeah, that just fits right into our sweet spot. But I think the transition from a postal-oriented mail carrier to a digital-oriented information infrastructure can really work for what we need.
Riffing on your allusion to 1984, would Winston Smith trust the post office with his digital data?
Winston was trying to avoid that institutionalized view of the world where we served Big Brother. And I think that's where I come back to the personal sovereignty, is that we have to respect the individual. We have to respect their ability to make decisions. We have to work in a rule of law. We have to avoid discriminating, and we need to be capable of living together with a set of principles. And so I think Winston didn't have a choice of who to trust. And I think we have the ability to avoid that scenario by respecting the individual, creating a society that supports the individual and functions together towards the progress of humanity, which is really in question in a lot of ways. Are we going to, survive many of the crises that we're living under today, whether it be climate change, AI, nuclear, annihilation, whatever it is that you can point to a number of ways we can destroy ourselves. We got to fix that.
I think that's a great place to leave our conversation. Rich Truex, thank you very much for talking with us on Discern This. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day.